show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got some Royals baseball to talk about. We got some wins to talk about. We got some Royals draft to talk about, and we got a special guest. Clint Scholes is going to join us here in our second segment to talk about the Royals draft. But before we get to that, introductions, of course. I am Jeff Herr, and the man who, believe it or not, has still not been called to testify in front of Congress, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this? It's a muggy evening here.
It's gross. Yeah,
starting to get to the heat that I don't like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like 90s all week and really gross. Yeah, not a fan. Yeah, I'm good. I'm sure my number will come up with Congress at some point.
Pretty soon. We'll see how far-reaching some of these investigations are, I guess.
Yeah, I just like, who knows? They could go pretty deep, I guess. I don't know.
We will see.
We'll find out.
But before that may or may not happen, we do have some Royals stuff to talk about. So, Mike, our streak has been broken.
Yeah.
The Royals, after three straight episodes of recording in which the Royals were 7 games below 500, 5.5 games out of first place, the Royals, as of today, as of this recording, and they've already played today, so we can't curse them.
they had the common sense to get the game in before we recorded. and won.
But, yes.
Naturally.
But the Royals won today, so that puts them at 5 games under 500.
It's 4 now.
It's what?
Yeah, they're 30 and 34.
Sorry, it's because...
probably still looking at the non-updated yesterday's...
Baseball Reference has not updated yet. That's right. So you're correct. 4 games under 500. And I guess it will be 4.5 games back of the Minnesota Twins for first place. So, which I guess if the Twins are playing tonight, I'm not certain if they are. But if they're playing tonight and they win, I guess it would go back to 5. But either way, it's not 5.5 is what my point is.
Progress.
Yes, 4 games below 500. So they've gained 3 games on the record, 3 games on the record, and a half game on the position of first place. So
as of right now, the Twins are losing 5-0 to Seattle. They are in the third inning.
Boom! And let us not forget, they have crawled out of the cellar, and they've booted the White Sox into last place, and the Royals are in fourth place in the AL Central. So. It's been a banner week.
Let's see. Since we're talking standings, let's see what the Tigers are doing. The Tigers are off today. So, no, the Tigers are losing to the Diamondbacks. So if they end up losing, the Royals will tie them at 30-34. So progress all over the place.
Progress, 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 folks. Inch by inch. Have you ever seen Any Given Sunday?
No, I know the speech, though.
Yeah, there you go. Inch by inch. Got to claw their way back. So it's been pretty positive. I mean, considering the Royals don't have Danny Duffy. They have the offense has woken up, and the pitching has been, solid enough to get by. You know, we talked about Eric Skoglund and his, very good debut performance. Unfortunately, since then, he's struggled quite a bit, and he's actually been replaced now in the rotation by Matt Strom, who we've talked about, we talked about in the offseason that we knew the Royals' goal was to get him to be a starter, but that it didn't quite fit this season because they kind of already had their rotation kind of locked in almost as during the off season, and they knew they wanted to compete now. Strom was more would probably help the team more as a reliever. You know, a lot of things can change in a few months, and now here we are, and Matt Strom is going to get Skoglund's next turn in the rotation, and you know we'll see what he can do as a starter. You know, he was that's where the Royals want him to be, I think, and I do think he's got the, you know, the ability to be there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. So when you heard that, what were your kind of thoughts? I mean, I definitely prefer someone like Strom to, say, giving Chris Young another start.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you heard that, and, you know, and unfortunately it's kind of that bittersweet, I guess you could say, if you want to see Strom be a starter like I do, but then you also were hoping that maybe Skoglund could kind of keep that momentum rolling from his first start. And, you know, obviously he wasn't going to be that good for the rest of the season.
Right.
But, you know, if he was just going to be, you know, serviceable to get you through the next month before Duffy comes back or whatever, then, you know, that's pretty positive. That's kind of all you can ask from a young player like that. So unfortunately that didn't happen. But, you know, the flip side is we get to see, you know, Strom as a starter.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that they went ahead and did it. But, you know, now that they have it, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, Skoglund is always kind of, you know, before the season and even when they were talking about calling him up, it just, I was like, really? Are they gonna do that? I mean, you know, and he pitched well in that first game. I mean, he's pitched well in the minors, but they were running into a situation where they were going to have Skoglund and Junis lined up to go back-to-back, or they were going to have to kind of move guys around. And, you know, when you've got Junis, who, you know, his last start, he was really good. But they're rookies, and they're kind of rookies that didn't have, like, a high profile. They've kind of earned their way into this situation, and kudos to them for that. But the talent on the level of a guy like a Duffy or Ian Kennedy or whomever, it's not really the same yet. Now, they might develop that way, but, you know, when you've got those two guys going back-to-back, you kind of want to space them out just in case you know have to go to an early bullpen. And I think that was the idea here. Also, just Skoglund, just on pure stuff, can't match what Strom has. Strom's not been consistent, but when he's been good, he's been, like, untouchably good. And, you know, it also works out that, you know, with Mike Minor, what he's done this year, he's really stepped up and performed like what you kind of expected Matt Strom would be doing out of the bullpen as a lefty. Plus, you've got Scott Alexander. You've got Brian Flynn, who's working his way back from the disabled list. So you've got some arms that give you some coverage to try this out. And when the Royals' next best guy that they could call up to fill some starts might be like Miguel Almonte, you know, nothing against him. I think he could probably handle it, at least to kind of be that stopgap. You know, they already have Strom, and he's pitched well at times, and they long-term want to see what he can do in this role anyway, so now's a time to try it. He's going to throw like 60, 65, 70 pitches, so if he's efficient, he might be able to get through five innings, you know, and then you can kick it over to the bullpen, and then, you know, depending if it goes well, they can keep stretching him out and things like that. So that's something to kind of be prepared for. He's not going to jump out and go seven innings right away. But, you know, if he can give you five innings in that first start and control the walks and hit the strike zone, that'll be pretty good. The other thing is, if it just doesn't work out, if they try him four times, they can always go right back to the bullpen with him. And it's easier to go from rotation to bullpen than the other way around. So they kind of don't have a lot to lose in this just because, you know, what else is going to happen? You're going to throw out Skoglund, who you're not sold on completely, or you can try something with Strom, who can probably do just as well and probably has more upside. So, you know, reflecting on it, it makes a lot of sense, and I'm kind of excited to see what happens, and hopefully he can harness all of the, you know, all of his stuff and kind of give him a good effort and kind of build on it.
Yeah, and, you know, the only kind of worry I have is, and I heard Mike Boddicker talking about this on 810 when I was coming into work today, that, you know, with Strom last year, you had a lot of confidence with him as the starter. He was a guy that was pounding the strike zone, and as you mentioned, at times he can look unhittable. Unfortunately, this year, as you know, we saw his early season struggles and such. His command doesn't seem to be quite where it was last year, and he doesn't seem to be as kind of dominant in. When I say dominant, I mean like in terms of, you know, how he pounds the strike zone. Like he doesn't seem to be pounding that strike zone as much this year. So, you know, that's a little bit of a concern in terms of starting for the sole reason of, as you mentioned, the kind of 65 to 70 pitch count limit. So, you know, as you said, if he's efficient, you can use that and kind of spiral or parlay that into, you know, five innings or so, which is pretty much all you can ask in kind of a spot start scenario like that for a pitcher that hasn't been, you know, fully stretched out. But at the same time, it could, you know, worst case scenario, it could be a Danny Duffy type, not when I say Danny, an early career Danny Duffy type situation where, you know, 70 pitches gives you two innings. You know, unfortunately.
Right.
So
yeah.
I don't think that will happen, but I'm just – if I have a concern in my head, that's the only one. But most of my feelings about Strom getting the spot start are positive because I'm excited to see what he can do. I'm excited to see if it changes his mindset a little bit, if at all. I'm not necessarily saying it does. I'm excited to see if it will and what kind of effect that has on him. And you know, I think it was Brandon Finnegan, after he got traded in 2015, made some, you know, kind of less than flattering remarks about the Royals in terms of kind of jerking him around. I think those were his words, even in terms of starter reliever, and he never really allowed him to kind of settle in. So, you know, I don't know how, depending on how things work out with Duffy coming back and how the rotation kind of squares out plays out for the rest of the year, you know, if Strom has to make a few more starts, but maybe they're not all consecutive and he's kind of teetering back and forth, you know, how is that going to impact how he plays and his mindset and those kinds of things? So, you know, just something to kind of look out for. But mostly, you know, I'm pretty excited to see what he can do as a starter because I do think that's where the Royals really want him to fit eventually. And, you know, if he can show that he can get it done and, you know, maybe he makes, you know, three or four starts if he needs to, and, you know, then the Royals are like, hey, we've got somebody here who he can do some things. He's obviously proven he can be a starter. Let's start him out in the rotation next year and let's let him go and have, you know, a full season, or I guess as long as it takes until you can no longer fathomably have him, but hope he never gets that, the Kyle Davies, Luke Hochever level of just, we simply cannot allow this man to start any more games. Hopefully he never gets to that point, but, you know, so this will be kind of a good litmus test to see, you know, what are the possibilities today? Even though, I mean, if we're honest, especially if he's on a 65 to 70 pitch count, whatever he does doesn't really have too much of a bearing on his possible future as a starter. It's a really, really tough situation. So if he doesn't come through and he has a bad game, it's like, well, it was a tough situation. We kind of had to – our hand was forced. Sorry. Better luck next time. You know, chin up, buckaroo. But you know, if he does really well, then it's like, well, you know, it wasn't a ton of pitches and people hadn't really seen him as a starter. So who knows? So, you know, it's not necessarily the most telling indicator of what his future could possibly be. But it's always good to see. So it'll definitely be an interesting one that I'll be paying attention to.
Yeah. Since April, so May and June, you know, he had that terrible start in Minnesota and just walked all those guys and then walked a bunch in Houston, went to the minors and came back. So just looking at May and June, he threw 16.2 innings, had a 2.16 ERA over those innings. It's pretty good. 22 strikeouts. That's pretty good. 12 walks. Okay, that's not that good. So that's kind of going to be the thing, is can he control those walks? But as far as being a starter, we've seen him go, You know, I think there's about 7 games out of his 20 this year where he's pitched more than one inning. So he's done the, you know, the pitch an inning, sit down, go back out there. He's done that at least. So that's not going to be any kind of a transition. He just has to do that a few more times. So I hope he can adjust to it pretty well. It'll be kind of interesting to see how he approaches hitters the second time through, because even in most last year when he came up, you know, he might have thrown 2+ innings, but maybe didn't see the team that second time through pretty frequently. So that'll be interesting to see. He does have the repertoire to really do that. He's got a good fastball, good curveball, good changeup. When he's commanding them, you can put him pretty much anywhere. When he's not, he walks a lot of guys. So
yeah,
that'll be the thing. So you make a good point about, you know, hey, is he going to get kind of booted around? Is he going to blow up at a certain point? And he might, you know. But the Royals are still well under 500, and while they have some momentum, Strom maybe gives them the best chance at this point. And if he doesn't, I don't know that they're really worse off than what their alternatives are at this point. So I guess it's worth a shot.
Yeah, can't hurt at this point. I mean, I guess it technically can. But,
it could, but...
You know, it's only one game, if you will. And not to say that...
Yeah, and if he looks really bad, then they could really abandon it. It feels like something, if they're looking to give him 70 pitches, they're not just going to jump out there and ask him to do that if they don't think they're going to give him regular rest to come back and get a second start and then try to work him up. So I can't imagine they would do the same kind of thing they did with Finnegan, where, you know, back and forth, up and down, you know, AAA, major leagues, you know, riding the I-29 superhighway to and from Omaha. So I think he'll probably be okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll have to see kind of how it goes, but... Interesting development. So,
absolutely,
that's pretty cool. And also, speaking of Duffy, who he threw 20 pitches in a side session the other day.
Good old side sesh.
So he's going to throw again on Friday, they said. We'll see how that goes. They say he's recovering quickly, but you know, it's an oblique injury. It's not something you want to rush, because one tweak basically restarts it. So,
yeah,
they're going to want to wait until he's completely 100% to really go. And he's probably going to be like itching to get as fast as he can.
Yeah. I mean, according to Danny Duffy, he's probably already 100%.
Probably,
that's just the kind
yeah.
of guy that he is. He would, you know, run through a brick wall
yeah.
to get back out on the mound, you know, and that's why everyone loves him. So, but the team really has to try and, you know, make sure the medical evaluations, because as you said, you don't want to reset the clock on that, because it'll be a nagging thing that'll just go on for the rest of the season. So the team needs to really trust their evaluators and take what Duffy says with a grain of salt, because I know he's itching to get back out there, but you really want to take that very seriously. But I want to talk about something you mentioned when talking about Strom. With you just said how they're, you know, the Royals have a bit of momentum now, as Strom gets ready to make his first start. And you're absolutely correct. And, you know, the pitching has been, you know, okay for the most part. They've got some good performance. Jason Vargas continues.
Yeah.
I think he's got a 2.1 ERA at this point. I mean, he's just having such a phenomenal season so far and has really helped keep the staff together, especially with Duffy out. But the thing that's really helped is the offense has picked up, and I will be remiss. I can't believe I let us go this deep into the show without giving the Balboni watch update. Mike Moustakas hit yet another home run today, which puts him at 18 for the season. And what's the AL lead is 21. Is that right, Aaron Judge?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I know he's over 20. So,
I think it's 21.
Judge has 22.
22. Okay.
Yeah. And then Logan Morrison at 18. And then, oh, looky there. Mike Moustakas is right there. Oh.
So that's cool enough, but we're talking Mike Moustakas through 57 games has 18 home runs, folks. That is just a tad over a third of the season, and he's already halfway to the record. So we're talking about he has essentially another 100 games to hit. He probably won't – I don't know if he'll – let's see. He's played – most games he's played in a season is 149. So let's use that. So he's got 92 games remaining this season for him to hit 19 more home runs. And he's already hit 18 and 57. So, I mean
– it's basically one every 4.5 games or so.
Right. I'm not getting my hopes up or anything, but – I'm getting my hopes up.
Do you have like one of those like countdown chains made out of construction paper?
Yep. Where
like
I just
countdown
turn
to
one
Christmas.
Off every time.
Yeah.
Yep. How did you know?
I have one too.
That we did make it together. I guess I should.
Right.
So I gotta pull it up though. I gotta pull up the Steve Balboni game log from 1985 because we gotta see here where he was at after 57 games. Let's see.
Last week he was at like 10. So
I know. I was like,
I wonder where he like picked it up. I feel like it was probably July and August when the Royals made some of their strides to get back into it.
In okay, season. So let's see. Right
there. Steve Balboni, who has the tonsure of a monk.
The tonsure of a monk.
Yes.
Yeah, 57 games. For Steve Balboni, he had 10 home runs. So same deal.
Weird. So, okay. Dang.
So he, yeah, because he hit, okay. So let's see. So from game 35 until, let's see, make sure I'm looking at the right call. Yep. So game 35 all the way to game 60, he only hit, so that's 25 games, he only hit 2 home runs in that stretch, and they were in the same game.
So basically went like 3.5 weeks without really a homer, more or less,
yeah.
And still holds the team record for home runs this season. Well, that sucks.
Ah, doesn't it?
That makes it even more painful.
He had a stretch here where, yeah, let's see.
He must have one of those where he had like 6 homers in a week or something.
Yes, he did. So from game 87 to game 102, he had
games.
9 home runs.
Yeah, that'll do it.
15 games. And he had, let's see, 4 straight games with a home run and hit a home run in 6 out of 7 games during that stretch. So that's kind of where he made up a lot of that ground. But, I mean, that's, you're talking like the end of July there,
mm-hmm,
for him. So, but then the rest of it was just kind of sparse. Like, he didn't really – let's see. So after that little stretch, for the rest of the season, he only had one time where he had home runs in back-to-back games.
Huh.
So this is,
if Moose has a run like that in him, you know.
Yes.
Because what he's doing – I mean, he's hit a few here and there. He had 2 in San Diego. He had 1 today. But, you know, I think if you hit 3 homers over the course of, you know, 2 series, that's – probably okay, but like, that's not 6 out of 7 games,
right?
That's a lot.
Yeah. And then, and that was with 6 out of 7 games, and then he went 3 games without hitting one, and then the next game he hit 2. So 10 games he hit 8 home runs. So I mean,
it's pretty good.
You know, that's pretty good.
That's one so every like 5 at bats.
Yeah, so if he has a stretch, if Moose has a stretch, I mean, let's say the next 10 games Moose had a stretch like that, he'd have 26 home runs before the All-Star break. Then you'd be talking, not only would you be talking breaking the Royals record, not only would you be talking getting over 40 home runs, you'd be talking a 50 home run hitter for the Royals, possibly. I mean,
jeez.
It's groundbreaking history in the making. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Right.
But even if you... Let's pull this up. I want to do the exact math here. So 18 home runs, 57 games. Let's say he plays 149 games total. That's 47 home run pace right now for Mike Moustakas.
Not bad.
Right? So That would be – and that's assuming he only plays 149 games. If he plays – say he plays five more and he gets 154, he's in the 155-game range, which is, you know, not outside the realm of possibility for a third baseman. You know, he gets – you know, maybe he gets another two, maybe three home runs, and then you're talking the 50. So I had this flash. I had this flash on the way home of thinking, I want you to tell me what your thoughts are on this.
Okay.
So let's say everything goes to pot and Moose gets traded, okay?
Yeah.
But let's say it's like literally the day of the deadline, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's the last possible thing. And let's
about
say
40-ish, 45, 46, 7-ish days from now.
Yeah, so it's probably an unrealistic scenario because it's probably – I don't know how many games are in there.
Yeah, but, and there's an all-star break in there too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I think you know where I'm going with this.
Don't let me taint the thought experiment.
If he were to break the record before being traded – so I guess – or this is how I was thinking of it in my head. What's worse? Moose to break the – be with the Royals the whole season – break the record and not hit 40 home runs, or Moose to be with the Royals, break the record, still get traded, and then hit 40 home runs but with another team. So, like, not 40 additional, obviously,
yeah,
but 40 total, but it ends up being with another team. So he would still have the record because he would still have hit 37 as a Royal.
Mm-hmm. I think that's okay because, I mean, he still gave you 37 homers.
I still like it, but I mean –
yeah.
I don't know. It was just kind of a fun little thought. Like, oh,
it would
man,
be less of a fun record to have, though, because then you'd always be reminded of the time that Moose hit 37
right.
homers and then got traded. Because right. that would suck.
Because they're both kind of bittersweet, right? One is mm-hmm. he hits 37 home runs. He breaks the record but still doesn't hit 40. And one is, well, he hits 40 but he got traded, so everything went to crap anyway. So which right. one is more bittersweet, I guess? Which has more of the bitter and which has more of the sweetness?
I'd still be upset. Like, I'm not as riled up about the break the record but don't get 40 as you are. But I would still be pretty it'd still be pretty sad. But I'd be more torn up by if he broke the record and was traded. So that would suck. But I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on how the next couple weeks go, but very good chance of being traded at some point. So I don't know what happens from that. It's a weird situation because the Royals are also in that spot where they have to decide, well, are they going to get what they want to trade these guys for? And how long are they going to stay around in contention? And how packed will the Central stay and the wild card and all of that. And so, I think conventional wisdom is that, yeah, they're going to hit a bad spell and have to sell guys off, but maybe they won't. Maybe they'll ride it out and just try to get draft picks for these guys instead. And in that case, you might have a full season where Moose can go for the record.
And I think what makes it worse when you talk about possible trade scenarios is things are lining up perfectly for Moose to be the most desired target but the most plausible trade scenario, because you've got he's showing the power that everyone thought he had when he was drafted,
mm-hmm.
Which is great. And you know, he plays a corner infield position, so you want the power from there. But mainly, and I keep hearing this team pop up, the Boston Red Sox are all in for this season here. And they're struggling a little bit, and they have an absolute mess at third base. Dick, a few years ago, after the Royals lost to the Giants in the World Series, and Pablo Sandoval became a free agent, Boston signed him to this huge contract, and everyone was always talking about his weight, and it never seemed to affect him when he was in San Francisco. He always seemed to have it under control, and then all of a sudden, things are out of hand. Like, the dude doesn't even play. I can't remember exactly how much he signed for, but it was a ton of money. And he doesn't even play. And the Red Sox, are, you know, from the – on 810 Radio, the Border Patrol, they have every Tuesday, I think, they have Trini Kuznarek from Boston. I can't remember the name of the TV station she works at in Boston, but she's a reporter out there, and she does really great stuff, and she's very – obviously, she covers sports, but so she's very in tune with the Boston scene, and she has kind of hinted that there's some interest from the Boston organization for sure, but also more so that they're very, very not happy with how the Pablo Sandoval situation has played out for them. So, and to make matters worse, you know, not only does that all fit in together to kind of the perfect storm to trade Moose, but then you're talking about Moose playing at Fenway Park where, I mean, if he's already got 18 home runs, I don't know. There's no way he doesn't hit 40 if he gets traded to Boston. I mean, let's be honest here. So
yeah, if he hits another, I don't know, let's say he's at 24 at the All-Star break, and then 2 weeks later he's got 26-ish, and then it's traded, spends 2 months in Fenway. Plus, he'd be playing some AL East games, so you'd have Baltimore, you'd have Yankee Stadium, Fenway, Toronto. Yeah, you would have opportunities to hit a lot more home runs.
So, yeah. And just to add a little bit. So,
Keep turning the knife.
Keep turning the knife. Well, between last year and this year, Pablo Sandoval has played 30 total games. Now, he's had some injuries, of course. He had a big injury. I can't remember exactly. Was it like a wrist thing last year?
I don't
remember.
Kept
him out for a really long time. I can't recall. But there was also some whisperings that maybe it was just kind of a fake injury, that the Red Sox were just like, hey, pack it in, get yourself in order, come back next season, and we'll get this thing right. But so anyway, you know, who knows what's happening here with
he's got like 90 at bats this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's hitting .211 with a .265 on base. I mean, he's a career .286, .337, .449 hitter.
Yeah, he always used to be a guy who had a little bit of pop, but could make a lot of contact and have pretty good batting average. I remember I drafted him a lot in fantasy baseball. Because it was cool. He's, you know, no one pays attention to him. He looks huge. And when he was with the Giants, all he did was just kind of hit the ball. You know, it was a pretty quiet 290 plus with, you know, 20
over potential. Yeah, he was kind of like a poor man's Tony Gwynn almost. Like, not only, you know, in body type and just kind of how he hit. Like, obviously not nearly as talented of a hitter, but, you know, this similar kind of approach almost, it seems. So
he was Billy Butler-ish.
Yeah,
in a way.
There you go.
Yeah. But yeah, so
no longer. So
no, but I mean, those guys there was some study I read a couple of years ago, and I can't find it now because I want to reread it, but it was talking about players of different types of, you know, body types and the aging curves and how they differ. And it's just, you know, it kind of makes intuitive sense that guys with the bigger body types break down sooner. You know, you figure those guys maybe are less athletic, maybe the weight is something that they struggle with, so the performance struggles with them. And, you know, you look at Sandoval, you look at Butler, and those guys have had some struggles earlier than where you might expect them. You know, the typical kind of curve, you start seeing the decline in the early 30s, and those guys are declining in, like, late 20s. So I'm sure that's, you know, got a big part to do with it, too, even though I think last year, or maybe it was even this year, he came into camp in really good shape. But regardless, yeah, the Red Sox have an interest there. And they've also been reportedly scouting Mike Minor, who would really help their bullpen too, who would be a really nice kind of sweetener if you were, to borrow one of the favorite terms of the old Royal Board from the mid-2000s. Hey, throw that guy in as a sweetener. Okay. Mike Minor, you know, he's pitching great out of the bullpen. Would really help to kind of push a team over the edge if you were waiting for them to budge on a particular prospect or to throw in an extra prospect or something. So that makes a lot of sense, and also kind of like, you know, not to just get into trade speculations, but like Lorenzo Cain, Kelvin Herrera, that's a popular combination for teams to try, or for you know, reporters and columnists to say, hey, the Nationals need to go get those guys. So, I mean, there's a market for these guys, and Moose is going to be one of those who draws a lot of attention. He might also be one of the guys the Royals want to keep more than maybe the others. So it'll be interesting to see how the next 6 weeks of the season play out and how the Royals approach the trade deadline, particularly if Moustakas is still on a record pace. Because I can't see them getting to a point where they decide, well, we can't trade him because we want to see him approach the record, because that's a pretty silly reason to like leave a deal on the table. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, it's something special. Maybe you can go for it, and if nothing else, if the guy does hit 40 homers, you're probably going to get that first-round supplemental pick after you give him the qualifying offer and he signs somewhere else. So,
and I don't know. And one thing that Trini Kuznarek brought up last time I heard her speak on 810 on this topic was the idea that, you know, Boston has made a lot of trades over the last year and a half or so, which is kind of why they're all in for this season. And so she was kind of lamenting they may not have as much, or they may not have enough left to really make a deal good enough, that especially if Moose is on that kind of a pace, that the Royals would actually bite on a trade that the Red Sox may dangle out there. So, you know, there's that to consider too. So, I mean, if you're the Royals, and even if you're in a position where you want to sell, you know, if Moose has got 26, 28 home runs by the All-Star by the trade deadline, and then, you know, the best deal you're getting is from the Red Sox, who are desperate for a good third baseman, and it's still not that great of a deal, then, you know, I don't know. It's not really, maybe it is worth hanging around for, you know, just kind of a nice little send-off for Moose, because then I think if you sell everybody else, then he's the last kind of guy. For like if Kane's gone and Hosmer's gone, and he's kind of the last of those that core. Obviously, Gordon and Perez and those guys will still be around, but you know, if he's kind of the last pending free agent that's still there, then you know, kind of a nice little send off, and he'll just continues to be legend in Kansas City as just like the other. You know, so many – we talked about it. I think it was last week or it was the week before, just all the accomplishments of this regime in the last 10 years or so, you know, culminating with that World Series, of course. And this would just be kind of another feather in the cap and one that would – and, you know, I still contend that there's a chance that, you know, if we're assuming a mass exodus from all the pending free agents, Kane, Escobar, Hosmer, Moose – that, you know, there's a chance those guys go win a World Series somewhere else, but probably the greater likelihood is that none of them win another World Series again in their careers. So just because the odds are just not in your favor.
Bet the field.
Yeah. So, you know, they're always going to have this special moment or this special time when they were together and when they did something amazing. And, you know, they're going to come back to Kansas City after they retire, no matter where they go and however long they play, you know, for reunions and celebrations of the World Series and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's just another thing that, you know, if Moose were to break the record this year, that'd just be one more thing that when he came back, that would just kind of hit you right in the feels, you know, when they introduce, you know, I guess the real hope actually would be if Moose breaks the record, well, if he plays for another, you know, 10 years, in the majors and then comes back for, you know, 15-year anniversary or something of the World Series after he's retired, the hope would be that the record is broken again before he has to come back. But if not, you know, announcing him in the celebration as the single season home run record or home run leader for the Royals, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's got to be a cool kind of feeling, and it would hit me in the feels. I know that. And so I don't know.
Well, another wrinkle on that would be if he did happen to be the last free agent, you know, the last guy to turn out the lights, so to speak, on the process era. It would be kind of fittingly poetic because he was Dayton Moore's first official draft pick in 2007. So
that's a very good point. I didn't even think about that one.
So he would the open the chapter. Draft,
they washed their hands of that before it even started.
Well, wink, wink. They didn't.
Right.
I'll say forever that Dayton made the final.
Yeah,
call.
I don't buy that. Yeah, but you're not going to take that job and not.
Official canon is official canon.
Yes.
That's redundant. Canon is that they didn't. So whatever. So we'll say that Moose is the first Dayton Moore draft pick.
Yes.
In his tenure.
Poetic. I mean, again, I want him to do. I'd rather him hit four. Well, I'd rather him break the record, but you know, I'd really like to hit the 40. But God, that would be rather poetic, wouldn't it? On like his last at bat as a Royal, as the last free agent to really turn out the lights and hit a home run to break the single season record. Like, I mean, you want to talk about, you know, how do you not get romantic about baseball? Well, mm-hmm. I mean, that's some poetry in motion right there. As much as I'd really love to hit that 40 mark. That would be a really cool moment. So, who knows?
Yeah. But,
anyway, now that we've sufficiently covered the Balboni watch, which,
right.
You know, it's
immensely.
If you recall, I know you're not the hugest football fan, but when the Patriots in 2007 were undefeated, you know, throughout the season, it's like the only guy from the 1972 Dolphins team that went undefeated that they could ever get to actually say anything was Mercury Morris.
Right.
So some obnoxious loudmouth guy.
Every time. As soon as someone loses as the last undefeated team in the NFL, yeah.
Yeah, so he's like, don't talk to me when you're driving around my block or when you're driving around my neighborhood. Come talk to me when you're turning down my street or something to that effect. You know,
uh-huh.
That's where we're at now. You know, Moose is circling the street in terms of that Balboni record, and he's about to turn down the street, heading directly towards the Balboni homer demon, armed with. I don't know what you
that
use
one guy's antlers.
Yeah. antler spray. I don't know if you holy water. I don't screaming locusts.
He's,
I don't know.
He's got a car like in Dumb and Dumber, but it's a big moose with the antlers.
Ah, yes. That's even better.
That's what it is.
Impale him.
He's going to run over the. Yeah.
Do you remember the thing a few years ago about the deer antler spray? You remember
deer
this?
Deer antler spray. No.
Yeah. So it was like when the Ravens won the Super Bowl, I think it was in 2012, Ray Lewis was on some show and he talked about some like radio show, and he talked about how he stays in such good shape, and one of the things that he said he uses to help himself recover is deer antler spray. So they take deer antlers, there's some sort of liquid in there that has apparently magical properties, I guess. And they would like spray it on like affected muscles, you know, after just doing a workout. Not they weren't necessarily, you know, pulled muscles or anything, just to help them recover. And he said it works wonders. And so then people started wondering, like, is this a performance enhancing drug? What's in this deer antler spray? Nobody knew. And so the NFL kind of investigated, and honestly, it just kind of went away. Now that I really think about it, I don't really recall exactly what all happened with the deer antler spray. So it almost feels like something that the NFL was like, hey, listen, this is definitely a performance enhancing drug now that we know what this is. So we're going to give you guys all amnesty because we didn't know about it, but nobody talk about it. Nobody use it again. That's what it feels like really happened. But that's why when you mentioned the antlers, that's why I brought up antler spray. So I'm not crazy. This is the thing that happened.
I vaguely recall that. I think more likely is that they took those players aside and said, hey, look, we'll agree to never talk about this again and keep you guys from sounding crazy for thinking that deer antler spray does something.
Yes.
Also, so, here are some sugar pills.
Yes.
They make you run fast.
Sugar pills. All right, so...
Anyway...
So we talked about – that was a lot about Moose. We talked some of the offense. I mean, Eric Hosmer continues to light it up in a very Eric Hosmer fashion.
Yeah,
and
367 since late April.
Yep. And, you know, it seems like every time you feel like, okay, because we know it's coming, right? We're at a peak right now with Eric Hosmer, but we know the valley is coming, and because it always does. So, but one of the things that's been encouraging, and Dave Lusky pointed this out to me that I hadn't really noticed until he mentioned it, was, you know, just kind of every time it seems like, you know, Hosmer has maybe a couple rough games and you seem like, okay, the valley's coming again, he's able to clean it up. And he, you know, he'll get a hit going the other way, and he'll be back on, you know, back on the horse again and doing well. So, you know, historically, Eric Hosmer, when he's at his best, it's not when he hits the most home runs, but it's when he's at his best as a player, as a hitter, is when he's consistently going the other way with the baseball. And, you know, he's been in this hot stretch the last, you know, 2 months or so now. He's been doing that. That's exactly what he's been doing. He's been going the opposite way. You know, he's only got 7 home runs, so, yep. You know, he's still on pace for close to 20 home runs, which that's kind of the hitter that he is. At this point, you know, this 30-40 home run guy, that's just not who he is. That's fine. You
he's going to have to end up in Colorado or Yankee Stadium or something, you know,
somewhere
for that
like
to happen.
That, that's favorable.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's going to be a 20 home run guy, but if he can hit 315, 364, 465 with 20 home runs, you can live with that, especially with the, you know, the defense he's giving you at first base.
Yep.
So, you know, he's and it's kind of funny because, you know, you don't really hear people complaining about Hosmer now because obviously he's doing really well, but it'll be interesting to test my theory of the, you know, the first 40 games. We always talk about it as kind of the first line of demarcation, but how that always defines the narrative for a player going forward throughout the season. You know, if you remember the best example, I think it was 2013, Kelvin Herrera, who got off to really bad, gave up like 8 home runs in the first, you know, however many games or whatever it was.
It was like all the home runs he gave up all year were basically in April.
And then after that, he was lights out for the rest of the year. But everyone, you know, whether it's Twitter or anywhere else, just scoffed anytime Ned Yost put him in the game.
Even in like 2015 at times.
Yeah. It's
like the guy went through 2014 with 0 homers, couldn't shake it.
No, it took him a long time to shake that off. So,
and then he had this year where it just kind of came back.
Yeah.
With good reason.
But anyway.
It's another segment.
another show, probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, and Hosmer had kind of the reverse almost. He's got really good reputation because everybody loves Hosmer. And, but he started off really poorly, and really, really poorly. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, he's at one of those peaks right now. So if he does dip back into a valley and things start going bad, it'll be interesting to see if people are like, oh, it's okay, he'll come out of it like last time, which is the reasonable response, or if people will be like, oh, I knew it was just a fluke, Hosmer sucks again. You know,
right.
That seems like the way that I think there's definitely going to be some people like that. We'll just see if it's the majority or not.
Well, at this stage, he's been good for a longer period this season than he was bad. So
right.
It's just, you know, at that stage, it feels a little more legit. And even, you know, since April 26th, you know, which was his low point as far as his batting average, since then, he's hit 6 homers. 6 of his 7 homers have come since then in the last, you know, 6 weeks. He's only grounded into like 2 or 3 double plays, whereas in the first 20 games, he grounded into like 6 or 7. So, you know, it's really quite a turnaround for him. You'd kind of hope that he walks more, but he's kind of trading that off by getting base hits the other way. And, you know, he leads the team in runs scored because he's on base a lot. And you will live with that. I mean, he's on base 41% of the time since that April 26th game. And that's covering a month and a half. That's a pretty good chunk of the season. So I feel pretty comfortable that he's going to be fine for the rest of the year. He's going to have one of those periods where he drops for a bit. But, you know, like you said, and like Lesky pointed out, you know, he's shown that at least those adjustments – are still kind of present, and at least since he's gotten back on track, he hasn't fallen into those funks where looks clueless and like he's never going to get out of it. he's finally kind of adjusted to the point where, you know, he's not getting buried. He can make those moves quickly and get right back to where he expects to be. And, you know, if he keeps that up, then, he's going to be pretty highly coveted either at the trade deadline or in free agency. So, you know, it's nice to see, though, because the whole thing has always been that he's very streaky, that he has these long stretches of, you know, grounding out the second. So far, he's kind of turning that around. But I agree with you. As soon as he gets on another cold stretch, it's going to turn around. There's going to be a segment, at least, that starts to bring up those concerns again. It's the same thing as when Joaquin Soria, but like one game this year, gave up like four base runners and a couple of runs. People were like, well, there he goes again, even though he's been lights out pretty much every time he's taken the mound. It's just as soon as that opinion is formulated, it's really difficult to turn it around and you know, either accept that, okay, maybe it's not always the case that a player is, you know, what you've seen here, or, you know, people just don't change their minds that much.
No, they don't. Well, I mean, it's just easier to maintain a narrative that developed early than to actually do research, you know.
Yeah.
That's why we're here, though.
Well, I fall into that, too. I mean, I'm pretty sunny still on Herrera, even though there have been a number of times where he's really looked bad. But at the same time, a lot of the same underlying conditions are pretty similar to what he's done the last year, 2 years. So that's why I don't get too worried about it.
Yeah. And that's why we're here for you guys, because we do the research. We put that time in. And then all you have to do is listen to us. And then
you know what to think. Yes.
Exactly.
Obey.
Exactly. All hail Hypnotoad.
Citizen Winston.
Citizen Winston. So I think with that, we will take a break here, and then we will come back for our next segment. We'll talk to Clint Scholes. He's going to give us kind of a draft rundown, breakdown of what he has been able to cover so far. Clint, dude is boom. He's in there. The draft happening. He's calling up coaches. He's talking about players. He's calling different scouts. He's talking to the Royals. I mean, it's phenomenal the work this guy does. He's got a lot of information. So we're going to go take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to have him on the phone. He's going to give you the rundown. So if you're interested in the Royals draft, definitely stick with us. And we will see you on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
What are you wearing?
A bear suit. Wearing a bear suit, Joel.
The Vault.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
Going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Limitatosis.
Yep. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl games. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, with us, we have a very special guest now. As we talked about last week, we were able to get him to graciously spare some minutes of his time. Clint Scholes, writer at BP Kansas City, as you all, I'm sure, know, kind of our local prospect expert, if you will. So we brought him in to talk a little bit Royals draft. Clint, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm...
catching up, trying to catch up with sleep and trying to get a hold of all these coaches and track down some Royals officials on them.
You know, and that's one of the things that I think is really awesome that you do. You know, it's not just, you know, looking at high school stats on a spreadsheet or whatever. Like, you're, no, you know, feet on the ground, talking to these people, talking to coaches, really getting the background on some of these guys. And for those who, you know, if you've read any of Clint's stuff, you know he definitely gives a lot of background information and more than just kind of the numbers that you can glean from kind of mining on the internet. So first, let's just dive right in. Clint, go ahead and just kind of give you a rundown. Overall, we'll start with the overall, and then we'll get a little bit more into the specific players. But just as far as the Royals draft, what are your overall thoughts, kind of first impressions from how they did?
You know, it's a little bit different draft in that they kind of spread out with talent throughout in the past. And a lot of it's due to pool allotment. But, you know, so you might have a top-heavy draft at the top some years, and then not much in the bottom. But seems like this year they had a mid-level pool amount with $8 million, right, 15th in the MLB. And so the amount that they were allotted, they got to go pretty deep and add some talent throughout the draft from what I've seen. I guess the first-round pick, Nick Prado, that's kind of the guy that everybody wants to know about. But they've got some good guys, you know, in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth round, and then before they started dipping into the money savers towards the back half of the first 10 rounds.
So going into the draft, what would you kind of categorize as the strengths of the Royals farm system and the weaknesses, and kind of how this draft addresses any of that? You know, how does it fill any gaps? Does it, you know, show a change in approach player-wise, or is it just, you know, they're kind of picking the guys that fit best at the point where they drafted them?
Well, what I see in this draft, and at least with the first few picks, is maybe Lonnie and crew are learning from what they do well in development and adjusting with their draft style. They've drafted some guys in the JUCO ranks as of late, and Cody Reed and a couple other guys that have written, Matt Strom, have developed well within their system, and left-handers, low three-quarter arm length, not really Cody Reed, but Strom. And so they attacked that with their third and fourth round picks. And then last year they got Nicky Lopez, a highly intelligent, good plate approach guy. And maybe that's what they see in Michael Gigliotti, straight up the middle guy, just like Lopez. As far as the strengths of the farm system, it's a weaker farm system right now, bottom third. I think the biggest strength, and we haven't seen it on the field yet, and I think it's going to play out, and hopefully it plays out, is what the 15 international class comes out. They're going to start landing here, and from what I've heard, in Burlington is where a lot of them are going to go. So seeing what Soly Matias, Jason Guzman, Esteri Uriz, seeing what those guys do, maybe this farm system's stronger than what we know. And so adding a Nick Prado to kind of mix in with them, I don't know if he'll go to where they go, probably not. But adding him to those guys, maybe we got a new wave that'll be coming about, and at least I hope that's what we got. But I think the strength, as opposed to what Keith Law says, is in the up the middle as far as in the shortstop group. And Ramon, what you see in Torres, I think it's too early to give up on Mondesi. So you got Nicky Lopez, and they got some decent catching prospects in Valoria and below. But overall, it's a kind of a weaker system currently, but now it's starting for the rebuild and add to that.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I was just going to say, so I kind of heard some people talking on in different sports talk shows about how, you know, they thought it was kind of curious, I guess, is what they were trying to get at. That is that, you know, the Royals drafted some positions like catcher and first base that they, you know, like, oh, these are obviously signs of, you know, people like Hosmer and Sal Perez, you know, possibly leaving soon if the Royals try and sell or whatever the case may be. Obviously, Hosmer's a free agent, but, personally, I've always come out on the side that with the baseball draft, you just whoever the best player is on your board. Like, there's just, there's so much that can happen between when they get drafted and when they get to the majors that it's not really worth trying to game out position by position. Where do you kind of come out on that, and where do you think the Royals fall out on that, and how do they kind of balance, you know, just trying to get the most talent in there versus, you know, how much of an eye do they have towards, you know, don't want to create log jams at multiple positions and that kind of a thing?
I agree with what you're saying. I mean, you're not going to, unless you're drafting at the very top and happen to be a team that's contending, like Minnesota this year. So let's say Minnesota, they're in first place. They had the number one pick. They wanted to add a pitcher that can get there right now, and they didn't view him this way. But let's say they viewed Brendan McKay as a starter that's ready to go right now. Well, then you'd take him, and maybe you grade him up a slight tick over another guy because he can – help your team right now, and he's ready to go. But as we saw with Brandon Finnegan in 14 and 15, so the Royals, they're not going to worry about log jams. I mean, they got Ryan O'Hearn, Samir Duenas at first base. Those will be the guys who get a crack, if not Hunter Dozier, when Eric Hosmer leaves. They've got Cuthbert and Dozier at third base if Moose leaves. But they don't have a center fielder right now that I see, unless Bubba Starling continues to make big strides that can replace Kane. So, and none of these guys that they drafted today are fast, quick movers that will be in the system, you know, to the major leagues. I do want to say, I forgot to mention, I think they've got a really bright young relief core at Wilmington, and they got three or four guys there in Union Marte, Richard Lovelady, and Gabe Kramer. That those guys might be all three major leaguers. At least they have major league arms. So maybe that's kind of the wave that we've seen in the past when Greg Holland, Lewis Coleman, Aaron Crow came up that all helped the relief corps. So maybe that's a group that kind of can work there. And that's been a strength of this development staff in the past.
So let's shift to, you know, you talked about O'Hearn and Duenas and who's going to replace Hosmer in the near future. But, you know, Nick Prado, you know, I kind of saw that, you know, I think J.P. Bukauskas kind of dropped there, and I think there were a couple of people that were like, hey, if he falls to 14, the Royals will take him. So I was a little surprised, but I also don't follow the draft as closely as you do. So were you surprised or, you know, just kind of, you know, kind of sounded interesting that they took Prado? And what's the kind of key thing for him as far as, you know, being a first baseman guy, is it his defense? Does he have the power? Is that going to develop? You know, what kind of hitter does he profile as?
You know, this is my own mistake too. I should have looked at this a little bit more closely. I didn't look at the pick values and the pick slots compared to what teams did last year. If you look at what the Yankees did last year, I think they picked up pick 18, and then they didn't have a pick till 62. So if you look at what they did last year when they took Blake Rutherford, California kid, really advanced hitter, he's a center fielder, so he's a little bit different than Prado. I think that's a very good comparison to what the Royals did here today, did yesterday and the day before, is that they had a big gap there from 14 to 52. So they took the best hitter on the board, or best young hitter on the board, and very similar to Blake Rutherford in that he's an advanced hitter, great plate approach, kind of a leader type kid, and you know, and he's been on, obviously, with the Little League World Series and all this other stuff, he's been on the circuit and going to showcases for years, so scouts really know who he is and have tons of looks on him. You know, normally when you draft a high school kid, the difference between a college kid and a high school kid is that a college kid, you get three more years of looks at him. And so maybe you didn't see him enough in high school, but then you get to watch him in college. Well, with Prado, they've had a ton of looks on this guy. He's been around forever, been on the showcase circuit. You know, if you're going to go scout Garrett Mitchell, there's a good chance that you're going to see, you know, Nick Prado playing him. If you want to go see Hagen Danner, his teammate, high school teammate, see what he's about, well, you're going to get to watch Nick Prado. I mean, that's just how it is out there in California with those kids. And so the thing that stands out to me, I compared him to Eric Hosmer. And the reason I did that, he's obviously not physically, he's not Hosmer, he's not 6'5". He's not that, but he can do the interview. He's an alpha male, leader kid, and that's kind of where my comparison is. And then obviously with the profile and high, you know, high reps and seeing him for years and years, much like they did with Eric Hosmer. So that's a comparison there. As far as hitting comparison, smooth swing, you want him to add pop, obviously. He's only 195 pounds, about 6'2", so hopefully he adds some bulk. Advanced plate approach, real clean around the bag defensively. That's a real plus there. Some think he's going to be a 60 defender, which at first base is value. I mean, it's not as valuable as it is up the middle, but still, we've seen with Hosmer, he's won a few gold gloves that can still bring some value there. I think ultimately, I mean, what you hope is that you got Joey Votto there, but, you know, that's a huge ceiling.
Yeah,
maybe if you end up with Wally Joyner, that's not that bad. You know, a good glove guy who can
hit. I take that.
Exactly. So I think that's the, you know, you hope you get Wally Joyner. You dream you get Joey Votto, and hopefully you don't end up with Mike Stadolka.
Well played. So, so it seems like you like the Prado pick. So I know you haven't.
I mean, mostly I like the pick, but I'm mostly mad at myself. I didn't recognize it. So, yeah. I mean, I thought they might go Alex Fado with the way the board fell down, because he's more of a likely chance to stick at a starter than Bogoskis. But I think they really wanted Trevor Rogers, and it just didn't work out for him.
Right on. Well, so. And I know you haven't delved into all 40 rounds of picks, but so far in your analysis that you've done, what's kind of a sleeper pick, if you will, one of the picks that maybe isn't catching, you know, a lot of the big hype, but maybe is something a name to just kind of tuck away and keep in mind for people to maybe look out for.
Well, I talked to you about those relief pitchers that are coming. I think a guy that you might be able to add to that is Tyler Zuber from Arkansas State. He was their sixth-round pick. Talked to their coach today, and he's 95, 96. Throws a hard slider along with that. Comes out of the same tunnel as the fastball, so you can't recognize it. Can backfoot it against opposite side hitters. Can stick it, you know, cut it away from same side hitters. So that's a real strength. I mean, the guy, they used him in a fireman role. So his numbers this year were ungodly. If you go to the baseball cube and look it up, I mean, he was a sub-1 whip this year, like 80-some strikeouts and 50-some innings. I mean,
wow.
Just a ridiculous numbers when they moved into the pen this year. So that's a guy who might be able to move real fast as a senior sign. He's not going to bring a lot of money, because he's a senior sign, but maybe you really get some talent there. He's a shorter guy. His coach kind of compared him to Kimbrel, but I think maybe you're looking at maybe a Greg Holland, hopefully as 5'11", 200 pounds, 195 pounds there. Hopefully maybe he can add even more velocity like Holland did to him out of college when you sink him down to just a one-inning type guy as opposed to working two or three like he did for them at times. And he's done it against high-level competition. He beat Louisville as a starter, like his sophomore or junior year. So, I mean, he's pitched against high-level competition, not just against Sun Belt competition, but from what he told me, the coaches in the Sun Belt just hated the kid. As soon as he got in, it was lights out. Good night. And so that's somebody you can watch on. Like I talked about Gigliotti, I talked with his coach just a few minutes ago. I think hopefully you're looking at a Nicky Lopez type. And he was a first-round profile kid at the start of the year. I wrote an article about him in January as a possible pick for the Royals in the first round, and he just got off to a real slow start with the bat. So he only ended up hitting in the low 280s, but he still carried a 400 on-base percentage. He's a 60 to 70 defender in center field. So the difference is, can he hit with any pot? You know, obviously he has good plate approach. His coach said he recognizes all pitches. And he did it with the wood bat at the Cape last year, hit well at the Cape. So hopefully he ran into some bad luck in college this year, and he can take that plate approach to the plate and just run with it as a top-of-the-order leadoff guy, or maybe he's a ninth-place hitter who plays a plus defensive center field, and and we'll see. Hopefully it's kind of on that Lopez profile, who's really getting a lot of steam in the system right now. So those two guys kind of stand out to me. I think they're 11th round pick, Sal Biasi. Maybe he's a, you know, a Junis type in that he throws in low to mid 90s, durable, kind of a not your typical tall pitcher, but more like 6'1", stocky, and good slider. Hopefully he can develop along that line. And then from there, they've got some high upside guys that they took in later picks. They took Brewer Hicklin out of UAB. He's their typical. They took quite a few multi-sport guys like they do in every draft, outfielders who play multiple sports who you hope they can develop into hitters. They yet to really hit on one of those guys, but they keep plugging
just
away.
Just takes one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. It just takes one to really develop into something else. It seems like every year they take four or five guys that were former football players that you just hope that they can develop into something else. But they're, you know, they took the two JUCO pitchers in the supplemental second round and the third round. And they're pretty similar guys. They're big body, 6'4", 200 and some pound guys, but they're a little bit different in that Evan Steele's been on the radar for quite a while as far as because he's from the Georgia, Florida area. So scouts have seen him for quite some time, but his coach told me that he really has control of his breaking ball. Doesn't control the fastball as great, but he has really good control of the breaking ball. Interesting thing with him, they used him for like 143 pitches in the JUCO World Series.
Oh, wow.
In the previous game to get to the championship game. So I'll be interested to see what the Royals do with him, and if they kind of hold him back or if they just let him go at it. I mean, that's a lot of money you're giving up for a guy who, you know, might have got Trey Hickman or Trey before he even got into the system. And then with Tillo, I wasn't as high on Tillo. I went and saw him. Actually, Lonnie was at the same game that I was at, and so I knew they were on him because Goldberg's not going to go out to watch a guy who they're not going to draft.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, evaluate him. And so he's a guy who, as a former, he's a Mr. Basketball in Iowa, so he could really play some hoops. I mean, Iowa, as much as people like to make fun of the state, they put out a lot of high-quality basketball players. And he was the first one in 20-some years that didn't get a Division I scholarship. But he could really shoot. I mean, 6'5", he's played all-state quarterback as well. And so he just hasn't got the time on the mound that you would think. I mean, he went to Kentucky, only pitched for 7 innings before transferring back to Iowa Western. And so there's some upside there. He's 91 to 93. He's got a good slider, has really no changeup at this point or hasn't used it. But, I mean, you're talking very limited time on the mound when you're playing three sports, so you're not playing summer ball. And you're in the Iowa, so you're in winter weather. So that kid might have some upside, more upside than what even I think. So he's one to watch considering how they've done with JUCO players in the past, here recently.
Well, you've given a ton of great info. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to give us a few minutes and fill us in on some of the stuff with the draft. If you can, I know you're probably still kind of working everything out, but in terms of, I know you're going to be digging into the draft as a whole and all the individual players a little bit more in terms of articles going up on BP Kansas City. Do you have kind of a tentative schedule for people to look out for on how you're going to handle your coverage?
I should have the top 10 round review ready. What is today, Wednesday?
Yep.
Yes.
Should have that ready on Friday. I'm hoping to have the other rounds right after that. Probably Sunday or Monday because I'm actually in the middle of moving our house right now. And then I got an interview with Lonnie tomorrow, Lonnie Goldberg, if I can track him down. And so hopefully that all comes together and I'll have it all ready by Monday at the latest.
Well, you are a tireless worker in terms of getting all this info, man. It's just, it's great stuff, and it's really amazing all the contacts you have, and really appreciate all the effort you put in. I appreciate you had taking the time for to come join us on the show. So thanks so much for stopping by, Clint. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks a lot, guys, and be on the lookout for a paywall soon. Just kidding.
only kidding, folks.
Breaking news.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll finish up the show.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
And George, you were right. Every day is a great day to be a Royal.
The Vault.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn Baseball Prospectus affiliate. That was Clint Scholes, you just heard in the previous segment, writer at bpkansascity.com. Fantastic stuff, as you can obviously hear. Just so much information that he has, and you know, I didn't ask him if he brought notes or anything, but just the amount of information he's able to rattle off about these kids, just seemingly, you know, just off the top of his head from what he knows, is quite phenomenal. And you can hear about the people he talked to. He talked to these kids' coaches. He's talking to the Royals, talking to all these different people. You know, he's plugged in. He's got incredible stuff. And be on the lookout for this Friday. He's hoping to have his first piece out, as he mentioned in the interview, on bpkansascity.com to get that out about kind of the first 10 rounds of the Royals draft, which, you know, typically those are the bigger signees, those are the ones that get the bigger bonuses and the ones that are, you know, have a better chance of being impact players. And then the rest of the draft will kind of filter out over the weekend and the early next week. So definitely be sure to check BP Kansas City and Clint Scholes and his writings to see about, you know, the bright future, hopefully, for the Royals from some of these draftees. And also, you know, his just Clint's normal stuff. It's the Diamonds in the Rough series where he goes over the minor leagues, who, you know, who's making moves down there. And you heard him, you know, Mike's question to, you know, strengths of the farm system and what he was talking about there, and some of the relievers at Wilmington to watch and everything. So he covers all these things and he does it really well. So be sure to check that out for the next on Friday, and then kind of into next week for their draft stuff.
That's everybody's homework, is to read that, and I expect a 400-page report from every listener.
Yes, that's your homework. Please, single spaced, 12-point font, Times New Roman. Thank you.
and don't mess with the margins, because
I
have a ruler.
I know these tricks. Don't mess with the margins.
Those tricks.
Yes. So with that, we will leave you on this afternoon, morning, evening, whenever you're listening to the show. Speaking of which, thank you so much for listening to the show. We love you all so very much. Couldn't do the show without you. Thanks to our sponsors, and go visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, and of course BP Kansas City, because Clint Scholes is not the only writer we have. Tons of good content we're putting out every day. You know, Friday, along with Clint's articles, you'll have Friday notes from Dave Leske, as always. You know, Craig Brown putting out articles, Hunter Samuels, Clark Foster, everyone contributing to the fantastic site that we have for you guys and all your Royals knowledge. So be sure to visit BP Kansas City, go grab a drink at Kelly's, and have yourselves a wonderful rest of the week. We're hoping that the Royals, they gained 3 games from where we were last week. So let's hope they do that again, and maybe let's push for a little bit more than half a game increase in terms of moving towards first place. So with that, we'll leave you. Thank you all so much for listening again. We will see you next week. Until then, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at BProKansasCity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.